Who is the scariest person you know in real life? Story one. I was a writing tutor in college, and there was this tiny senior Vietnamese man named Nhat Nam who would come to me for help with his English 101 writing assignments. Super nice, quiet man, militantly polite and humble. They got a prompt along the lines of, write about a memory you'll never forget. He handed me his essay to check over, and it was a 4-page description of how he used to crawl through tunnels and take lives during war. He described coating himself in mud so thick he would blend into the walls. One story involved him silently moving through a room of sleeping soldiers and eliminating each one. His writing was that of a new English speaker, matter-of-fact descriptions of what using a knife in combat was like. For example, on Thursday I got 3 at the entrance, then the doctor and his patient, then the 4 youngsters in the big room, then the radio man. They were eating, so I had some rice and fish. Then I dealt with the 2 men at the back entrance. Then I left and rode my motorcycle to my mom's house, and we played cards. Story 2. My grandma was part of the Croatian resistance during World War II and would lure enemy soldiers into the woods, where they would be ambushed. She helped burn down a barn that was being used as a Nazi outpost. She eventually fled to Tangiers, where she defended herself against an attempted assault by stabbing the attacker. She later earned enough money to make it to America, where she settled in northern Minnesota. Again, someone tried to attack her while she was walking home from work, and she bit down on his lower lip and pulled so hard that it basically peeled the skin down to his chin. I've seen her scare away wolves and bears with cooking pans. She smoked a pack and drank a pint of brandy a day until she died. She was just some tiny old lady, but she scared the hell out of me. Story 3. I once had a job at a company that employed a man as a security guard who would later be revealed to be a murderer. At the time, he seemed like a fairly nice but rather moody young man. While I was working there, a child in the broader community disappeared from her home one evening, and it was all over the news by the next morning. I got into work, and there he was at his post, silently grinning, while his colleague explained that the missing girl was from his neighborhood and that he had stayed up late assisting police and neighbors in the search. Unfortunately, they had found no sign of the girl, and she remained missing for more than a year. As you've probably guessed by now, this young security guard was the one responsible. He later admitted to his girlfriend that he had taken the child's life, and it was revealed that he had hidden her remains in cold storage on the premises of our workplace. This horrible truth came out years after he left the job. It was also discovered that he had previously taken the life of an older woman at least a year before being hired. He wasn't scary in his manner, ever. That's what makes my memory of him so disturbing now. Story 4. I've met the pastor of a local megachurch twice. He's tall, conventionally attractive, with a winning smile. I am a lesbian. I mention these things because his presence was unnerving. He walked into an office where I used to work the front desk, and the moment he entered, I suddenly felt the need to be the best receptionist he had ever encountered. I needed him to notice me. I needed him to see what a great job I was doing. And I wanted him to walk out that door thinking about me after his appointment was over. It wasn't romantic or soul attraction. It was something I had never felt before in my life. And the moment he left, it felt like the air rushed back into the room. I thought, what just happened? Good thing I'll never let that happen again. But the next time he came in, the same thing happened. I intend never to let our paths cross again. Story 5. There was a guy in my friend group in high school. We were kind of the weird, geeky kids, but this guy was on a totally different level. He would drive around looking for the little roadside memorials that people around here put up when a loved one dies in a car crash. Usually they consist of photos, stuffed animals, saint candles, maybe something seasonal for a holiday. This guy would check out the photos to see if the victim was a young woman, and if so, he would take the photo and add it to his collection. He had a dozen or so that he kept in his wallet, like a grandma might carry to show off her grandkids. He knew all of these girls' names, personal details from obituaries, yearbooks, whatever he could find. He would talk about these girls like they were his girlfriends. I met this new girl named Jenny. We're going to get together this weekend. Sometimes he took the stuffed animals from the memorials as well, but only if he thought they had actually belonged to the girls. How could he tell, you ask? He would smell them. I still wonder how many young women he may have hurt without anyone ever knowing. Story 6. This is my mom's story. She passed away 3 years ago, so I'm sharing it for her. For a little background, my aunt lost the love of her life to a genetic heart condition that took him at just 38 years old. Jump forward 7 years, and my grandmother and all of my aunt's friends kept telling her she needed to move on from Jack and meet someone new. One night, my aunt went to a bar and ended up in a whirlwind romance that, after 3 months, led to her getting engaged. My mom and dad went to the engagement party, and when my mom met my aunt's fiancé, Harry, she immediately disliked him. X. Uncle Harry looked a lot like a young Robert Redford. He was the life of the party. He could crack jokes and have the whole room roaring with laughter, and in his words, he never met a stranger at a checkout line. He was friendly, funny, and a good listener. My mom left the engagement party early because she couldn't pretend to be happy for the couple. My aunt got upset and grabbed my mom's arm as she tried to leave. My mom turned around in front of everyone at the party and said, "If you marry that man, he's going to kill you." A little over 5 years later, my cousin from my aunt's previous marriage came home from a sleepover to find Harry smashing my aunt's head against the floor. My cousin grabbed his hunting rifle and shot and killed Harry. How my aunt survived without permanent brain damage is beyond me. It came out when the police talked to my cousin that Harry had begun seriously abusing my aunt about a year into their marriage. It's shocking how we think we can spot a dangerous person when we see one. But that's not always the case. Somehow, though, my mom immediately sensed that Harry was not who he pretended to be. Story 7. I haven't seen him in over a decade, but I used to get rides to work from a guy who liked to tell stories about his criminal past. He said he robbed 7 banks along a single stretch of road outside Cleveland in the 90s. He had just gotten out after a 20-year stint in federal prison and even showed me photos of a cartel boss and a mob boss he'd befriended behind bars. He used to say he kept a mask and a pipe in the car just in case. I figured he meant a weed pipe since he smoked a lot. Mostly synthetic stuff because he was on parole and couldn't use real marijuana. Then one day he pulled out a lead pipe and a Halloween mask. He also told me a story about how he had attacked a bouncer in front of a nightclub after being refused re-entry. I've never met anyone who scared me as much as that guy, especially when he adopted a chihuahua from a kennel that had kennel cough. He would go on about the ways he'd hurt the original owner because he believed the dog had been abused. Oddly, he was really sweet with that dog, even spoke to it in a baby voice when dropping me off with my girlfriend after work. Story 8. I was talking about this with my family last night. One of my aunt's husbands is the kind of person whose inner cruelty shows on the outside. That man kills the grass he stands on. He exudes so much negativity. He beats her and used to beat his children constantly until they grew up and were finally able to stand up to his enormous presence. He is unkind to everyone he meets, and no one or anything is ever good enough for him, except his own relatives, who are all narcissistic, entitled people. He is a cold, mean, manipulative control freak who believes cruelty is honesty. He thinks he can do no wrong, sees himself as righteous, maintains a fake sense of calm, but if you look closely, he's clearly a spring waiting to snap. He resorts to threats and then to aggression if people call him out or challenge him. He's the kind of person dogs growl at on sight, and he ruins any sense of peace just by entering a room. I truly hope my aunt leaves this miserable excuse for a human being. We've tried to help her, but she sees the good in him. He is a school director. How he's held on to that job can only be explained by how much he intimidates others. Story 9. We had this longshoreman who called himself Indian. He had a bad temper, stood about 6'0", 210 pounds, mean, not especially bright. He was union, but his supervisors were scared of him, so it was hard to get rid of him. Eventually, he got into a fight with a crane operator and was replaced. On the river, you don't mess with the crane operator. I had inherited Indian, so I'd only had to deal with him for a few months. But word got around that he blamed me for being let go. A few months later, I heard he was in jail. He had gotten into a bar fight and seriously hurt someone. By coincidence, I had a check for him. It was some deposit refund for returned equipment, maybe $300. I knew the sheriff in the area and asked him to find out what Indian wanted us to do with the money. A few days later, the sheriff called and said I could either mail it or bring it in to deposit. It was only about a half hour away, so I decided to make the drive to see Indian. I gave him the check, asked how his case was going. Not well. The guy had a broken neck and a fractured skull. When we were nearly done talking, I asked him what kind of Indian he was. He said he didn't give himself that name,
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Some boat pilot did. He was actually full-blooded Italian. Torriton, my brother's ex-girlfriend. One of her old boyfriends was training to join the Special Forces, and she didn't want him to leave. She tried to guilt him into skipping workouts and eating more fast food like she did. When that didn't work, she hit his kneecap with a bat. She was deemed mentally unfit by the court and diagnosed with sociopathy, but somehow managed to lie her way out of the psych ward. Then she met my brother, who knew none of this. He flew to the Midwest from Japan, where they were living, for a family wedding, and she, without his knowledge, followed him. She ended up spending the weekend with our family, and she was terrifying. She lied and manipulated constantly, her eyes cold and emotionless, and my brother told me he felt trapped and couldn't break up with her because of her threats. Eventually, after I confronted her, she overdosed on my bed. We got her to the hospital. She probably knew just how much to take to pass out but survive. My brother still has nightmares about her. Also, I used to teach in a maximum security prison. I try not to find out what the inmates are in for, so I can treat them with the same respect. But one of my coworkers once told me about one class I had. Every student was a serial offender. Some of them genuinely gave me the creeps. Story 11. I know, work with a guy. I'll leave out his name. Who's a skinhead currently serving 25 years for taking the lives of two people and decapitating them in his front yard one night. He keeps pictures of the crime scene in his cell, not because he likes looking at them, but because he likes showing people what he did. He's also taken the life of one cellmate and seriously injured another. He's obsessed with hunting and frequently talks about cleaning animals. He's currently in high confinement, which means 23 hours in a cell and 1 hour outside. He refuses food unless it's brought to him by someone who's white and otherwise causes it to be thrown. He's not doing this for show. I genuinely think the man has completely disconnected from his humanity and believes he's above the rest of mankind. He terrifies me, but I don't dare let it show. Story 12. One time this lady decided the best time to learn how to parallel park would be during the lunch rush on a busy street. I was stuck behind her for nearly 10 minutes while she tried to park in a space the size of Texas. Eventually, there was enough room for me to get around. I flipped her off and continued back to work, now late from lunch. At that same moment, a massive F-250 truck was coming from the opposite direction, and in my mirror, I saw him make a sharp U-turn. Thinking nothing of it, I kept driving. It was a nice day, so my windows were down. The truck pulls up, and this bald, muscular guy leans out and yells, "Hey, if you ever flip me off again, I'll break those fingers and shove them where the sun don't shine." I'm a normal-sized guy who's been to the gym, but this dude looked like he lived in one. I genuinely thought I was about to get attacked, just one block from work. I quickly explained that the gesture wasn't meant for him, it was for the woman who couldn't park. He just replied, "Oh, never mind," and sped off. I may or may not have peed myself a little. Now, whenever I flip someone off, I keep my hand low and out of view. Story 13. 30 years ago, I was a wine buyer for a group of restaurants. The head of national sales for a major wine company lived in town, and he'd occasionally drop by, usually with his elegant European wife. The rumor in the wine business was that he had once been a high-level undercover cop, French connection type stuff, before transitioning to wine. His name was, I kid you not, Dante. One day, Dante dropped by with a bottle, and we had a pleasant conversation. Months later, he returned with another bottle, and we began talking again. That's when I realized the first conversation we had hadn't been real. Every line, every smile, every gesture, it was exactly the same. And somehow he was guiding me into saying the same things I had said the first time. I thought, this isn't a human. Dante looked a bit like Kevin Spacey, so I always think of him as Keyser Souza. Story 14. My brother. Pretty sure he's some mix of narcissist and sociopath. He's a big, strong guy who can't control his emotions. Terrible combination. He's extremely insecure, with a lot of bottled up anger. One minute he loves you and says how great you are, And the next, if you say the wrong thing, he loses control, berating you and escalating things all the way to the car. He does the very things to others that he can't stand being done to him, like being questioned or called out. I truly believe he could accidentally hurt someone he claims to love in a blind rage. Though he's a grown man, he acts like our parents don't exist, blaming them for everything instead of taking responsibility. He can't be alone. He can't face reality. His life is built around self-medication and avoiding self-reflection. He's seen multiple therapists, but will only work with those who reinforce his views. He even started seeing one who was a personal acquaintance. Totally not how therapy should work. He does just enough to convince himself that he's working on his issues without ever truly changing. It's sad and scary. Sad. I rarely talk to him now, and when I do, it's on a surface level. I've been gray rocking him for years. It's the next best thing to cutting him off completely. I still feel like I have to manage him just to keep the family safe. Story 15. I used to work on safety protocols for care homes. I'd inspect the surroundings, assess care needs, and write up procedures. One of the residents was a man whose dream, his actual dream, was to harm women. Specifically, he wanted to decapitate them. Nothing elaborate, just a straightforward obsession with doing it as often as possible. Following procedures strictly is exhausting and often inconvenient. A few months after I left the job, the staff sent a young temp alone to deliver his medication. No alarm, no backup. She had trained extensively in martial arts, and her instincts kicked in just in time. She dodged the first swing of an axe that came from behind the door, got the door between them, and escaped. She quit the job. That guy was terrifying, but his neighbor, the pyromaniac, somehow even worse. Talking to him felt like interacting with an alien life form. He completely lacked empathy. It was like a poorly programmed AI trying to mimic human behavior. He didn't want to hurt people, but he simply wouldn't care if they died in a fire he started, no matter how many. Story 16. I was filling in as a camera operator for a documentary about a professional high diver. We were supposed to film her and her family assembling aid packages for Ukrainian refugees. As soon as I walked in, I was greeted by her father, an older man with piercing eyes yelling at me in a heavy Russian accent. "What's your angle? What kind of story are you telling about my daughter?" She calmed him down and explained the project, and he eased up. After filming, I chatted with him. Let's call him Rick. He told me he used to be a soldier in Soviet Russia and later started a private security firm after the USSR collapsed. Between the corruption and the mafia, companies like his were always busy protecting shipments. One time, his team was stopped by young mafia members who didn't know who Rick was. Right then, Rick's entire demeanor changed. He reenacted the moment and said something like, "I see you have two handguns. Three of us have pistols and the other three have Uzis. You can take some money and leave, or we're going to have a problem." They took the money and left. Rick despises Putin and communism. He once asked me, "When has communism not resulted in bloodshed?" I had no answer. He and his wife now work tirelessly to coordinate aid shipments to contacts in Poland. The man scared me, but I'm grateful people like him exist. While many work to enrich themselves at the expense of others, Rick fights just as hard to do something good. Story 17. I grew up with a group of five friends, myself, three other boys, and a girl. We got into a lot of trouble as kids, and some of that carried into our early adult lives. Me and one of the guys, kind of my best friend from the group, I'll call him S, dropped out of high school and went to Florida. This wasn't that long ago. We were the class of 2016. Anyway, to get to the point, S ended up serving time, 4.5 years in prison. One of the other boys in our group passed away in 2017, and at the time he was dating the girl in our group. I'll call her R. When S got out, we all hoped the best for him. And honestly, he really seemed like his old self, charismatic, fun, and lighthearted. He started dating R not long after being released, and they moved into an apartment in the city where we all grew up. We used to get together often and hang out again. We'd get into some things, but as adults, we were more laid back. Mostly just did a little coke and played cards, laughed and reminisced about all the things we'd gotten into over the years. We filled S in on everything that happened while he was locked up, like how the rest of us used to trip on acid all the time. I met the girl I'm with now while hanging out with the group in a college town a bit up north. We went on a few double dates, and it felt like the good old days, just with less trouble. Sissy started showing signs that something had changed, maybe about 2.5 to 3 years after getting out, like there was a part of him that wasn't quite right anymore. We'd be out doing something that was starting to get out of hand, and the rest of us would be like, okay, time to call it, because we're grown now and don't want to get in serious trouble. But S would always be like, forget that, I don't care about everything. I know I'm rambling, it's just hard to tell this story. I've never been good at it, and there's so much to unpack. He and R started getting into fights. Things got worse between them. She eventually filed domestic violence charges, and after that, they stopped coming around as often. When they did, they still seemed like themselves. They'd ask me how I was doing so well in my relationship with the girl I met through them. Before I get into what happened, I really want to emphasize, these were good people, my childhood best friends. We had seen it all together. We'd done it all. S used to be a really good person. I think he always had some issues. We all did, but none of us were evil. I had to respond to a few calls from both of them after one would hurt the other. I kept telling them they needed to break up, move away from each other, maybe get some mental help. I stopped going around because it got too hard to watch. I did everything I could to help. In July of this year, I got a call from a mutual friend of ours. She hadn't shown up at work for 2 days, and the police were looking for her. In my heart, I knew exactly what had happened. A few days later, they found her body, wrapped in plastic and left in a dumpster near a park we used to play at as kids. They said she was unrecognizable due to decomposition and the trauma she'd suffered. They found him the same day trying to leave town. He was recently convicted on all counts. They got him for everything. The earliest he can be released is in about 31 years. During the trial, a lot of horrifying details came out. They said he hit her in the head with a hammer while she was in bed. There was a hole in her skull. Her jaw had broken and folded into her face. She couldn't be recognized by photos. It was all over the news in our area. It was unreal hearing those things about people who had been my best friends. Seeing their pictures on TV in that context was surreal. Even as I write this, I still can't wrap my head around it. I'm leaving out a lot of the more graphic details, but the news didn't. They reported everything. He has to be the scariest person I've ever known. To this day, I can't help but imagine it, replaying it in my mind. I can't believe she's gone. We used to trip together all the time. We made so many memories over the years, and she didn't deserve that. I can't imagine the kind of mind it takes to do something so horrific. Story 18. I went to an engineering school with a guy-to-lady ratio of 7-1. It took me a year to find fellow female friends. One of them actually lived within walking distance, and we got along really well. She introduced me to a second girl, who I also befriended. But it quickly became clear that this new friend was terrifying. She was obsessed with the first girl and drove a wedge between her and her husband. She even moved in right next door and would tell me about how she'd sit and watch the couple make breakfast or watch TV together. Eventually, they had to get blinds. She also ruined my friend's college career by accusing her of abuse and cheating. Professors sided with her, even though there was no evidence and none of it was true. The scary one also had a cat, but seemed to have a strange problem with the stray cats in the neighborhood. She started feeding them to draw them in, conditioning them to come to her house. Then she began trapping them. She told everyone she was taking them to a shelter to get them fixed. Turns out she was actually harming them. I'm not sure what happened to her. I think she went back to her home state to live with her very conservative parents. Story 19. I worked as a chef for a state governor from 2008 to 2013. The governor's mansion used inmates as workers around the house. A couple of them worked inside, doing things like arranging doilies and polishing silver. Most worked outside as groundskeepers. Many of them were serving life sentences for serious crimes. Almost all had harmed their romantic partners. Only a few had committed crimes outside of relationships. One of them, first named Dan, I heard he passed away a few years ago, had caught his common-law wife, his partner in crime, with one of their dealers. Dan shot the man. He survived, though seriously injured, and then turned on his partner. He bit her severely during the altercation. Apparently, he bit off parts of her fingers when she tried to defend herself. He also bit her chest badly. I read all this in his records, which were accessible through Freedom of Information. His case was the most disturbing by far. Dan always gave me the creeps. I never felt comfortable around him. He openly bragged about what he had done and seemed to enjoy making people uncomfortable. Wherever he is now, I hope justice caught up with him. He was a dangerous person through and through. Story 20. It's a tie between two unrelated neighbors I had at my old apartment complex. One was a large, intoxicated man who crept up behind me while I was taking the trash out at night. He was clearly drunk, eyes half shut, and he body blocked me between two dumpsters. Then he asked if I was scared because, in his words, little women can get hurt out here. Luckily, another neighbor, this big muscular guy who was super kind, happened to be walking his dog nearby. He witnessed the whole thing and just said, "Go home." The man slinked away, and the kind neighbor helped me file a complaint. We combined it with several others, and eventually the state placed the guy back into a supervised facility for individuals with criminal mental health backgrounds. The other scary neighbor was a woman who would run out of her unit and follow me every time I walked my dogs. She'd ran about her personal and dysfunctional business ventures while I just stared straight ahead and nodded. One day while I was out, she got into a screaming match with another neighbor, stormed into her place, and shortly after that, the building was on fire. She later screamed that it was an electrical issue before fleeing. A month later, she suddenly reappeared and followed me while I was out with my dogs. She said that the firemen can't prove anything and that she had left the state but came back to get something from her burned-out apartment. She added that she was feeling manic and told me I'd better not tell anyone I saw her, then giggled the whole time. I just nodded and looked straight ahead until she walked away. Story 21. It's got to be my Uncle Mike, my aunt's third husband. The guy's a sociopath. He doesn't care who he hurts. I used to drink and smoke with him when I was younger. I stopped that. My cousins are grown now. He used to get really drunk and messed up, sometimes using other substances, and he would hit my cousins. One night, he was completely out of it and came into my yard trying to fight my stepdad. It all started because we heard him hurting my cousin. The cops didn't do anything. And my aunt, she defends him no matter what. Anyone who says anything bad about him is automatically the enemy in her eyes. Her own daughter claimed he did something incredibly inappropriate to her, and my aunt completely cut her off. They haven't spoken in over 8 years. My mom and dad hate him. My whole family does. I'm honestly scared that one day he's going to do something that can't be undone, something permanent. Story 22. My ex was attractive and had a polished exterior, but there were hidden demons. He would constantly question out loud what it might feel like to jump from the fourth floor of our apartment. He talked about people who had done horrific things and would say things like, "Depression blinds you from right and wrong." His eyes would sometimes look completely blank and dark. I remember going to a company party where an artist drew caricatures, and the expression he gave my ex looked hauntingly evil. My ex would tell me all his past girlfriends just up and left, vanished without a word. He used to wake up screaming in the middle of the night and shaking uncontrollably. One night I asked him about it. He came to my apartment with an informational packet about PTSD. He told me he showed signs of it. Then he said he had done very, very bad things in his life. I tried to comfort him, saying everyone has done things they regret. That's when he looked at me with a blank expression and said, "I've done the worst thing someone could do to another person." I knew then exactly what he meant. I broke up with him a couple of weeks later. He cried, held on to my legs, and yelled, "This is just like with Jessica." I still don't know what happened to Jessica, but he moved out quickly after. Story 23. We'll call him Double. His family is well connected to a cartel, and they move large amounts of product through a particular city in the southern United States. This guy is a true predator. He would target some of my less outgoing friends and offer them things like cosmetic surgery, braces, or hair extensions, promising to help them become their best selves. But in exchange, he was exploiting them. He claimed to have taken lives and once told me he liked to inhale gasoline before doing it because it made it feel like a video game. He also bred, sold, and organized fights for pit bulls in abandoned houses. For some dumb reason, I let a lot of this slide. We were close friends, and at one point, he physically saved my life. That made me feel like I owed him, so I kept overlooking things that really challenged my morals. One time I went with him on a deal like we had many times before, but this time was different. We were about 2 hours from home. He got into an argument with the people we met up with. There was obviously history between them. They told him he could return later that night with something to make up for the money he owed before they'd do business. As we turned to leave, one of the guys grabbed my shoulder and said I had to stay as collateral. What terrified me most was how easily Double said yes to that. I ended up alone with five men for several hours. As you can probably imagine, I was harassed and assaulted the entire night. On the way back home, I couldn't stop wondering if he had brought me along on purpose, knowing what would happen. That thought still haunts me. When I moved out of that city, I told almost no one, just a few close friends. Not that I believe he couldn't find me if he wanted to. I'm just hoping that day never comes. That man is a monster. Story 24. I survived a psychotic serial offender, someone I had strangely dreamed about for several months before I ever met him. I won't go into detail, but he was terrifying. In fact, he scared everyone he came into contact with. During his trial, grown men who testified were visibly shaking in the witness box. The other scary person I've known is a 6'5" man. Let's call him Frank. After enlisting in the Army, he went to Vietnam, where he became separated from his platoon and survived a month alone in the jungle. His family was told he had died, and they even held a funeral for him. What he had to do to survive that month was beyond description. As he once put it, "I've forgotten more ways to end a life than most have ever learned." When he returned, he spent 6 months being debriefed in California. From there, he became part of a biker gang for a few years, then disappeared to a tiny town far away where no one would find him. I met him years later and only knew him as my friend's husband, the strong, silent type. From these experiences, I learned that horrific violence not only happens, but it happens more often than people think, and it's far worse than anything shown in movies. There's something deeply wrong with the way our world works. People think that if they sing "Jesus Loves Me," the rest of the darkness can't be real. But I learned it is, and it's worse than anyone could imagine. Real life is much harder than we can comprehend until it happens to us. Story 25. My mother lived through the Great Leap Forward, the Cultural Revolution, schism in the workplace, an abusive marriage and in-laws, and finally elder abuse at the end of her life. Some suspect she was involved with organized crime at one point. I wouldn't be surprised. She once received a warning from a friend about the events at Tiananmen Square, with enough time to alert a colleague who was on a business trip right by the area. She lived every day in fear that society would collapse again and the government would betray the people. She passed on that paranoia and hypervigilance to her children, often in ways that would be considered neglect or even abuse by today's standards. She had an incredible amount of grit, but she was also deeply emotionally unavailable due to what I believe was untreated PTSD. She only spoke about her childhood twice, once unprompted in reaction to something on TV. The second time we saw something else on a show, and all she said was, "I'd heard about that." I'm certain she witnessed both events in person, likely many times, along with other horrors she never spoke about. After my parents separated, my mother never dated or brought another man home. She lived the rest of her life in quiet desperation, always preparing for the next disaster. I'm about 70% sure she loved me. Her passing may have been the most peaceful thing she could do for me. It's complicated. She did try her best. She also modeled strength, confidence, wit, discipline, and humor, which gave me an advantage in learning how to love myself. I miss her every year, especially as February approaches. I never doubt myself because I am my mother's daughter. Story 26. I'm an elementary school teacher. I've been in this profession for 14 years and have worked with hundreds of children. Many of them were neurodivergent or came from traumatic backgrounds, so I'm not easily shocked by behavioral issues. But there have been three students at my school who genuinely scared me. I taught two of them and assisted another teacher with the third. These children were different from anyone I'd ever worked with. I could tell something was off immediately. It was a certain look they all had in their eyes, like looking into the eyes of a shark, pure predator, emotionless. These students didn't know each other, weren't related, and I worked with them years apart. But they all had that same look and displayed the same behaviors: unpredictable, volatile, aggressive, violent, manipulative, mean-spirited, and highly intelligent. I truly believe they were sociopaths. It's one thing to see this kind of behavior in a child. It's chilling, but the thought of crossing paths with one of them as an adult terrifies me. The oldest of them is a teenager now. Last I heard, he had been expelled from two different high schools for violent behavior. Story 27. For me, the scariest person I've ever encountered was a former employee. He had great credentials and interviewed well. But after a couple of months, he started calling and texting me on weekends with strange, euphoric messages, raving about how great the country of Chad was, we're in the U.S., and how he was going to treat the entire department to a Christmas party there. I let it slide the first time. He said he was having issues with his fiancée, whom he'd moved in with after relocating. But then I started getting complaints from coworkers about his job performance. The text continued, the complaints increased, and I brought in HR. I remained calm but confronted him during the week, never on the weekend, about tasks left undone and poor quality work. Then he started showing up disheveled and admitted to sleeping in his car after his breakup, despite earning a $70,000 salary. Complaints began about his odor. Then he stopped showing up in person and claimed to be working remotely. Meetings turned bizarre, with him calling in from a sleeping bag, slurring his speech. HR and I had to intervene again. Eventually, he sent emails to HR and even our CEO, accusing me of creating a toxic workplace and listing nearly every HR-related buzzword he could. We eventually let him go. For context, I'm over 40, and so was he. After we terminated him, my boss was so concerned he called the local police to issue a BOLO, be on the lookout. I've been watching my back ever since. Even a year later, we're still discovering unfinished tasks he claimed were complete. Despite checking everything closely, more things keep turning up. Story 28. My brother. Everyone likes to think psychopaths are those high-functioning American psychotypes, but a lot of them are just idiotic brutes too. My brother has zero ability to connect consequences to his actions. This isn't hyperbole. This has been tested. If he hits you and you hit him back, he genuinely doesn't understand it's in response to what he did. To him, you just decided to hit him for no reason. One time, he lost some money and asked me to unlock his car so he could check inside. I did. He couldn't find it, came back, and started going through my wallet. I asked him what he was doing, and he said he was looking for his money. I told him to get out of my wallet, and he attacked me, saying that the only reason I'd stop him was if I had stolen from him. He genuinely didn't understand that I, someone with an actual job, might have money in my wallet that was mine. He also permanently injured me, intentionally, years before this. And during this attack, he specifically took advantage of the very disability he gave me. He had never beaten me in a fair fight, so he sucker-punched me while I was vulnerable, and did so without an ounce of remorse. Story 29. I don't know this guy personally, but I did interact with him. My wife and I were attending a family wedding and stayed at a local hotel. We got in around midnight. I was the designated driver, so I was sober. At 2:30 a.m., I woke up to use the bathroom and heard a piercing scream from the room next door, followed by loud crashes and a terrifying male voice. I called the front desk immediately. A lone woman working the desk came upstairs and knocked on the door to tell him to leave. I stepped out of my room just in case he reacted badly. He was smooth. He talked his way through it, saying, "Oh yeah, totally," to her. As soon as she left, I heard him say to the woman inside, "If you don't be quiet, I'll hurt you." I called the front desk again and told them to call the police right away. Thankfully, now that others were aware of the situation, the woman inside gained the courage to tell him to leave as well. I was still thinking I might have to intervene physically if he got violent. He left just as the police arrived. I gave them a statement because she didn't want to get them involved. She minimized it. It turned out they had a no-contact order, not just a restraining order, but an actual court mandate saying neither of them was allowed near the other. I told the officers they needed to find him. He was the scariest person I've ever encountered, not just because of what he threatened, but because he made me seriously prepare myself to cause physical harm to someone. I hated him for threatening to hurt a woman just to control her, and even more for pushing me to that dark place. That man left a mark on me. Story 30. That would be my dad, but not in the way you might expect. Not because of trauma, absolutely not. My dad was the textbook example of what a father should be. Every now and then, maybe once or twice a year, he'd have a few beers. Not an alcoholic, just enough to unwind. Then he'd sleep it off and everything would go back to normal. I was 17 when this happened. I'd been out with friends and had just gotten home when the phone in my room rang. It was my dad calling from a bar saying, "I've had too many to drive home, son. Can you come get me?" Of course, I grabbed my keys, jumped in my truck, and headed out. When I got there, he was at the bar with about 3/4 of an old Milwaukee left. I asked for a Coke and sat with him while he finished his drink. He paid his tab, and just then, a group of guys walked in with the town troublemaker. Let's call him Earl. Earl was bad news, always had been. In and out of jail, no redeeming qualities. He walked into the bar and loudly declared, "It's my birthday, and everyone here is going to buy me a beer." Dad got his change, and we went to leave. But Earl stood in front of him and said, "I didn't get a beer from you. You're not going anywhere." Dad calmly told him, "I heard you when you came in, happy birthday. But my son and I are leaving now." I should mention, my dad wasn't some towering figure. He was 5'9", maybe 225 pounds. Solid. You've heard the phrase, built like a fire hydrant? That was my dad. Oh, and he was a Golden Gloves boxer in his youth. We walked past Earl, and as we stepped outside, I heard the bar doors fly open behind us. Earl shouted, "Hey! I said you ain't leaving yet!" Dad moved me behind him and repeated, "Look, buddy, I told you happy birthday. My son and I are leaving." Earl cocked his fist to throw a punch. And before I could even process it, I heard pop, 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 pop. My dad's hands were a blur. Earl dropped like a sack of bricks and didn't get up. That was the moment I realized my dad was not someone to mess with. Calm, respectful, but when pushed, absolutely capable. I never looked at him the same after that night. Story 31. Someone I knew. My good friend of over 20 years had a grandfather, Joe. He was always a lovely, polite, and welcoming man. The quintessential friendly grandpa who overfed us and snuck us treats when our moms weren't looking. Unfortunately, he passed away earlier this year, but had lived a long, fruitful, and adventurous life. Something we've come to realize was quite the understatement. We found old Joe's military journals. They were extensive and very detailed. Based on what my friend and I have read so far, we believe he was directly involved in at least 30 confirmed kills. He described a hand-to-hand combat situation in which he plunged his blade into a man's neck, describing how the blood and grime left such a taste in his mouth that he had to rinse for days to get rid of it. The next journal entry was essentially a rant about the low quality of breakfast rations a few days later. The stark contrast between those two entries was jarring. I felt cold reading through it. Honestly, I don't feel comfortable continuing through the rest of the journals, but a part of me, morbidly curious, wonders, what else? What else had this kind, loving old man been capable of in his younger years? I'm not sure I want to find out. Story 32. This isn't as intense as some other stories, but definitely the scariest person I know. My oldest brother. There have been several times when he's shown behavior that deeply disturbed me, especially when it comes to animals. When I was about 14 or 15, we found a mole swimming in the pool. I went inside to tell our parents. By the time we came back out, he had held it down with the pool stick until it drowned. When I was around 17 or 18, I found a baby bird that had fallen from a tree. We have dogs and sometimes wolves around, so we brought the nest to the roof, hoping the mother might sense it and come back. We passed by my brother on the way up and explained what we were doing. The next day when we went to check, the baby bird had been crushed, like someone had clearly stepped on it. We used to have a dog, my dog's baby, and he didn't like my brother. He would growl whenever my brother came near. I was away on a trip when I found out my brother, on my dad's order to get rid of the dog because it barked too much, had taken him in the middle of the night during pouring rain and left him in a cage in the woods. When I got back and heard what happened, I searched everywhere. Eventually, I saw a photo on the shelter's Facebook page, my dog, drenched and scared. I didn't claim him. I couldn't bring him back into that environment. I was just relieved he was alive. What really creeps me out is that on the surface, my brother seems normal. 30s, no romantic relationships, no real social life. If he's not working, he works 12 hours a day for himself. He's exercising. But there's always this blank look in his eyes. He can carry a brief, polite conversation, but only on subjects he knows well. There's just something missing, like he doesn't fully understand empathy or human connection. Sometimes I wonder if it's undiagnosed autism or something else. He lives in the same town and has all his life, but if he takes a road outside his routine, he'll get lost. No one questions him because he works and is successful. My parents are proud of him for being stable, though I think they mean predictable. Everyone else in the family had rebellious phases. He's probably the only person I've ever met who doesn't sit right with my spirit. Interacting with him is deeply uncomfortable. Story 33. An ER doctor I used to work with. He was the definition of unpredictable. He reminded me of a silverback gorilla. He'd skulk around the ER, mostly quiet, and then suddenly explode. Yelling, throwing charts, berating nurses and staff loudly in front of patients. He would talk badly about other physicians without hesitation. I'll never forget one particularly busy night shift. He called his wife and screamed into the phone, "I'm having a really awful night, and I want to make sure you have one too." Thing is, he was brilliant, triple board certified. He worked a grueling schedule, at least 24 12-hour night shifts per month in the ER, plus weekdays in his private clinic. He barely slept, maybe an hour or two a day. It was a small, rural hospital that struggled to staff the ER, so the administration did nothing about his behavior. One night, I straight up asked him, "Do you ever worry that you're a sociopath?" He giggled and said, "No, I know I'm a sociopath, so I don't worry about it." Story 34. My grandmother, she would linger nearby during private conversations and later use that information against you, almost like blackmail. Those who knew how she operated constantly walked on eggshells because if you upset her, she'd bring up random dirt from decades ago, usually in front of others, to either embarrass you or remind you she wasn't someone to cross. She had a hair-trigger temper and would flash you the look if you said anything that annoyed her. She was also quick to slap or hit. One time, my uncle joked with my mom as a teen and said, "Man, you have sweaty pits." And she slapped him across the face because she thought he said something worse. She would call us all names in public and laugh if we cried. She financially exploited my great-grandmother, her own mother, so badly that she had to hide cash around her apartment so it wouldn't be taken. Her only redeeming moment was when she verbally tore down my verbally abusive biological dad to the point of actual tears before my mom divorced him. In 2003, my grandfather, her husband, died. I was devastated. He was my favorite person in the world. When he told me earlier that year he had cancer, he said he wasn't going to treat it because dying would be better than continuing life on the same earth as her. He passed 3 months after that conversation. She didn't cry once, despite being married for 44 years and having 3 children with him. She passed away in 2017. The only people at her funeral were my mom, who paid for it, me to support my mom, and a few of her friends who had no idea what she was really like. I feel a little guilty saying this, but I haven't been sorry for a single second since she passed, considering how she made our entire family feel. Story 35. My older brother. When the Columbine High School tragedy happened, my mom and I couldn't help but notice how much he resembled one of the shooters. We lived in the Denver suburbs just 20 miles from Columbine. He wore the same long trench coat, had access to weapons, was a loner. He was even expelled from school for having a firearm. He once locked me and a friend in our parents' bathroom and told us he was setting the house on fire. Another time, I came home from a date with a guy who later became a professional MLB pitcher and found my brother sitting on the roof with a camera, pretending it was a sniper rifle. He and I were adopted separately, but he's always blamed his breakdowns on my presence. I was the more social one, popular even, which seemed to make things worse for him. He moved out at 17, and I've heard he has at least one outstanding warrant. It's been 30 years now. I still reach out to him for birthdays and such, just cordially. His IQ is incredibly high, but that doesn't make him less scary. He always had this volatility that felt like it could snap at any moment. Story 36. I met this guy in 8th grade. He was new at our school and really nice to me, but something always felt off. Around that time, I started reading books by John Douglas, the criminal profiler behind The Silence of the Lambs. Ironically, Buffalo Bill's house is in my town. He looked like he was 25, even though we were in 8th grade. He visited my house once because my dad and I had exotic pets, snakes, a sugar glider, an iguana, and he was involved with the fire department who had done us some favors. I liked the guy, but I always told my mom something about him wasn't right. She brushed it off as typical boy behavior. I never saw him again after 10th grade. Then 15 years later, my dad ran into him at a doctor's office. They had both suffered work injuries. My dad told him to call me because I worked with a workers' comp attorney. He called and mentioned he had a problem with a woman. I felt uneasy. Turns out the problem was much worse. He had kept a woman captive, drugged and assaulted her for days. She escaped, running from his house unclothed and screaming for help. I saw the story on the news, but they hadn't released his name yet. The worst part? Our district attorney mishandled the case, and because they didn't turn in evidence on time, it violated his right to a speedy trial. The charges were dropped, and I saw him that very week. He gave me a huge hug and told me the case had been dismissed. I said something like, "Glad you're doing better. Stay out of trouble." Just 1 week later, he did it again. Picked up another victim. This time, the case stuck. The things he did to those women were horrifying. He put out cigarettes on them, tried to injure their hands, and inflicted prolonged suffering. He's been in jail since 2008. As much as I liked him when we were younger, I believe he's a danger to society. I'm now in school for applied criminology, same as what John Douglas studied. I hope he never gets out. I can admit I cared for him as a friend, but some people need to be locked away for everyone's safety. He's one of them. Story 37. My ex-boyfriend, who's in the Navy. We dated for only 9 months, but the entire experience felt like something out of a horror movie. In the early months, he seemed almost too nice, like he was overcompensating. It turns out he had a serious addiction and had posted private images of me on certain adult websites. I had no idea until I went through his phone months later. He also cheated on me and blamed me for his experimentation. I tried to break up with him several times, but he would drive to my apartment and sit outside all night until I had to walk past him. At the time, we were long distance, about 2.5 hours apart. I thought maybe if we spent some quality time together on vacation, things could get better. He offered to pay, so we planned a 10-day trip to Florida. He insisted on driving, even though I was anxious about long car rides and flying would have been cheaper. My feelings were never a priority to him. I was broke and didn't want to ruin the trip, so I agreed. Just 20 minutes into the drive, he started bringing up the abuse I experienced as a child. Not to comfort me, but to compare me to my abuser. He claimed I'd passed down the same pain. I was immediately triggered and went silent for the rest of the drive. Once in Florida, he began posting ads online trying to find strangers to join us, without my knowledge. He even invited people to our Airbnb, though thankfully no one showed up. I discovered all of this while we were at Disney World when I saw an email pop up on his screen. We had a huge fight, and he threatened to leave me stranded with no way to get home. The final straw came one night when I was giving him a back massage and popped a blemish. He snapped, grabbed me, left bruises on my arms, screamed in my face. I kneed him twice to get him off me and screamed until he left. I packed everything and told him we were leaving in the morning. He came back hours later, drunk and emotional, slept on the couch, and woke me up crying. I told him to get his bags. In the car, I made it clear my friends and family knew everything. I shared my location with them and warned him not to deviate from the route. Every stop, gas, food, traffic, I sent updates. We haven't seen each other in years, but he's now married to a woman who looks exactly like me. I have a very specific body type that's not common, and somehow he found someone identical. She's now pregnant. I still think about how terrifying that relationship was and how lucky I am to have escaped it. Story 38. My German friend once got a detective to reopen an investigation simply because he started asking questions at the bar where my friend had been drugged. Thankfully, she was okay, taken to the hospital, and kept safe. Because of him, the suspects were found and detained. Further investigation revealed the bar was also running a hidden brothel, with some of the waitresses involved and bartenders helping customers spike drinks. Eventually, the place was shut down. He barely knew the friend, had only met her once or twice. But when I told him what happened, he was furious. He made things happen because he's that kind of person. He's 6 feet 6 inches tall, has a deep voice and strong accent, and looks like someone you wouldn't want to cross. But he's also one of the kindest, most protective people I know. Story 39. A guy I used to be friends with at a gas station I frequented. Where I lived at the time, there was a heavy presence of the Pagans MC, a major biker group and rival to the Hells Angels. Most of my state was predominantly pagan territory, so running into them was normal. For the most part, they were respectful and cool. There was one guy I kept running into at the gas station near where I worked. He seemed like the rest of the guys, until he got arrested. Security footage later surfaced of him beating a Hells Angel support member with a bat while the man was fueling his bike. That clip is still floating around online. I'd heard stories before, but it wasn't that incident that really scared me. What terrified me was a discovery I made recently. I drive trucks now, and I often listen to audiobooks. One was about an undercover officer who infiltrated the Pagans MC. Near the end, they mentioned a familiar name connected to drug trafficking, weapons, and murder-for-hire plots. Hellboy. That was his nickname. I realized the timeline matched. He had just gotten out of prison for those charges when I first met him. So there I was, casually talking with a guy who had been involved in extremely violent crimes. Someone who, under the wrong circumstances, could have turned on me in a second. You truly never know who you're talking to. Story 40. I'm not sure this is the scariest person I've ever known, but considering I spent time alone with him, it definitely shook me. It happened during my tattoo apprenticeship. I befriended this guy who was a few years older than me. He was eccentric, had unique tattoos, struggled with mental health, but seemed incredibly kind and warm. I tattooed him, and we hung out a few times. He was gentle, not in a fake or overly charming way, just seemed genuine. He vanished from social media after a while, and I didn't see him around. I often wondered what happened. Then one day, a friend confided in me that he had assaulted them. That's when the full story came out. He had been diagnosed with schizophrenia, which I already knew. But years before, during a psychotic break caused by substance abuse, he believed his parents were spies and ended their lives. He then poured boiling water on them and called his brother to come see what he had done. When I had known him, he told me his parents had passed away and that his brother had taken his own life. I didn't realize he had been the cause. Story 41. My stepdad. Now, first let me say, he was a very angry man, and my brother, sister, and I fell into line quickly when he got mad. He was a super perfectionist. Our chores had to be done to perfection, or we had to do them again. And by perfection, I mean if we forgot to dust one item in the living room, we had to redo the entire room. He was in the Army in Vietnam. He was a medic in a Green Beret. After his first tour, he returned to the U.S. and landed in Los Angeles. His parents were expecting him in a few days in Colorado. While walking across the tarmac in his uniform, some protesters screamed at him and other soldiers. One spit in his face and called him a baby killer. He turned around, got back on the plane, and went straight back to Vietnam. He served several tours after that. He shipped a bunch of his belongings home and told his dad to just store them. Upon getting out of the Army, he went to his dad's house and started going through the boxes. He found a necklace made from mirrors and put it back on. Said he was happy to be able to wear it again. His dad sat him down and talked for hours about how he was supposed to behave now that he was back in the States. He acted right in public. But while at hunting camp and drinking, he would tell stories about what he and others did during the war. He was always angry. His first reaction to anything was rage. Looking back, the things that triggered him were so insignificant, it's shocking. I joined the service and moved out. Got married. A year or so later, my wife and I visited my parents. My wife would not be alone in a room with him. She said she sensed something dangerous in him. If he entered a room, she left. A few years later, my mom had had enough of his anger. He was never physically abusive, just deeply verbally abusive, and she was done. She used some inheritance money from her aunt to buy a small house in town. She wanted to tell him to get help or she'd leave, but she needed to make sure she had a way out. During this time, my sister got married and had kids. One day they were at his shop and he screamed at her young children. She stood up to him and said he may have yelled at her, but he would never do that to her kids again, and she broke off contact. After my mom got her second home, she sat him down and told him what she planned to do. He loved her with all his heart and immediately went to the VA hospital for help. He was diagnosed with severe PTSD and went through extensive counseling. He made friends with other veterans and realized he wasn't alone. The turnaround was complete. He became a different person. My wife now enjoys being around him. She no longer sees the danger she once did. He stood by my mom and was her biggest supporter while she battled cancer. After she passed away, my sister noticed signs of him slipping back and had a serious talk with him. He recommitted to his mental health and he's doing well again. But I know that if he stops trying, if he becomes depressed and gives up on the work, he could easily revert. Without my mom there to be his anchor, it's a scary thought. For 20 years after Vietnam, he was stuck in his own mind. Love brought him back, Without it, I don't know what would happen.